I'm Bill Littlefield, and it's time for three stories you should know. I will wager you've heard about a certain recent Supreme Court decision, and that's where we're going to start this week. I'm joined by Greg Howard from the New York Times and by Olivia Christian. She's the executive producer and host of The Game Last Night. Welcome to both of you.
Hi, thanks for having me, Bill.
Hi, Bill. Thanks so much.
Greg, we did this thing with the dice. You roll double sixes. You go first.
So in 1992, Congress, they passed the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, and that prevented sports gambling from being legalized on the state level. But on Monday, the Supreme Court struck down that law, so now each state individually can decide whether they want to legalize sports gambling or not. The expectation is that many states may legalize sports gambling in the near future. But the NCAA, they strongly oppose gambling because they argue that gambling will corrupt student-athletes and they're going to sully the purity of amateur sports. But really, if states legalize sports betting, it'll lead to even more money being injected into sports and even more people making money off of unpaid student-athletes. It makes it that much harder for the NCAA to defend this idea of amateurism. Another thing is like point shaving and things like that aren't really a problem in major American sports because the guys make so much money. Like LeBron James isn't going to risk his multi-million dollar contract to shave points for $20,000 or $10,000 or $5,000, right? But a college athlete, they're not being paid. They don't have much money. He might or she might. And so the best way to ensure that college sports aren't corrupted by gambling is to pay the athletes because then they'll have less incentive to take money and shave points.
Olivia, I'm going to ask you to speculate on the effect of this Supreme Court decision. Do you share the NCAA's concerns?
I'm not really concerned with the NCAA's concerns. I'm concerned with the players' concerns. I'm concerned with the players being fed, having clothing, getting an education, being paid for the work that they're doing. I want to see them get paid, and I think they need to figure it out. It's figure it outable. And these decisions just make it more urgent. Let's get on it.
Regarding pro sports, I'm guessing the big change will be that the men who own the teams will become even more wealthy at the expense of the people who can least afford to see their money funneled upwards. Some guys, Jeremy Jacobs, who owns the Boston Bruins, has said, me some too. If people are going to gamble legally on pro sports, I want my cut. And I don't know how that's going to work out. With regard to college sports, I guess there'll be more dramatic recognition that college football and basketball are huge money-generating machines, and perhaps that will plunge the NCAA into terminal spasms of hypocrisy. And if so, that would be good, and perhaps they would collapse. And I can't imagine anything that follows would be worse than the NCAA. But, Greg, I'm willing to let you tell me that I'm wrong.
Oh, no, you're not wrong at all. everything you said sounded correct and righteous. I'm a true believer that the NCAA should be kicked into the sea.
All right, Olivia, it's your turn. I await your topic.
Well, we're deep into the NBA playoffs, which means it's time for the NBA to start pushing the promotion of the WNBA. And I've noticed, you know, those commercials are coming up more frequently. We see stars like Steph Curry and Isaiah Thomas saying, we love the game. We're learning so much. It's exciting. Them too. And in this era of women supporting women, I wonder if NBA fans, female fans, are going to take another look at the WNBA. They're, what, 21, 22 years into their existence, and it's been a huge challenge for them to translate the fame of college athletes into being famous as professional athletes. I have to say, after I watch a full season of basketball and go through the thrill of the NBA finals and the playoffs, I'm burnt out. I'm ready for baseball. So it's hard for me to convert as a viewer to the WNBA when they're starting, you know, it's a whole new season. They're starting from scratch, if you will. But again, I'm pro women supporting women, but I haven't been convinced by that league that that's something that I should invest my time in.
You know, I think basketball is probably the most individual sport. It's star-based. They have the most power. They're the most visible. Five guys on the playing field go to court instead of 11. They're not wearing helmets. And I think so much of NBA fandom is based on connecting with players that you like. And that's one thing that I think is lacking through the WNBA. You know, I think everyone watches March Madness women's and men's basketball tournament. And when they're stars in UConn or Notre Dame or something like that, you know, when they make the jump, they generally end up being stars in WNBA as well. And you don't really see a real investment in these personalities that would drive fans to the TV. And so I'm not really compelled by the WNBA. And I don't, it might be media's problem. You know, it might be marketing through WNBA, but there aren't those personalities that I'm particularly attracted to, which is a shame because of course there are in the NBA, right?
I'm thrilled that I'm going to get to be the contrarian this time around. I think the WNBA is terrific. I'm happy to see the promotion that the NBA players have done. And if there was a WNBA team here in Boston, I would be there. I don't relish driving all the way down to the casino in Connecticut to watch the team that plays there. And unhappily, there's nobody closer. But there are a lot of great stories in the WNBA, and I'm afraid that the league is caught in that awful sort of catch-22. It doesn't get enough coverage because it's not regarded as big enough, and it's not big because it doesn't get enough coverage. And I wish that that would change, although I would remind people that 20 years into its history, the NBA attendance average was a good deal less than the current average attendance at WNBA games. So I think there's still plenty of hope, and good on the women who have brought the league this far.
Bill, I don't disagree with you. I think the WNBA is great. I love that they exist. I understand the NBA's history in a lot of professional leagues. Baseball, they were running around playing in barns and backyards before they got to where they are now. But my point is that there are a lot of women who are NBA fans. And there are a lot of women who are fans of these top players in the WNBA when they're in college. Mm-hmm. But somewhere there's a disconnect. We're not seeing those eyeballs go with these players as they become professionals. I think I agree with you with the chicken and the egg thing. You can't get viewers until you have these stars being promoted, but you don't want to promote these stars until you have eyeballs. So it's a challenge. And I encourage women who are fans of the NBA. I encourage all people, of course, but a lot of times it starts with us. If we want to support each other, get our fellow women paid for what they do, recognized for their hard work, there's going to need to be some kind of conversion here because what it is now isn't working.
All right. I got a second gambling story to toss at you. Last year, the LA Rams were 26th in attendance, 63,000 fans average, but they still beat their neighbors, the Chargers, who were drawing about 25,000 per game to the StubHub Center, which, to be fair, is a preposterously small venue for NFL events. Stan Kroenke and his wife, who own the Rams, are gambling that a better, bigger building will draw lots of people to their games, and they're putting up some portion of over $4 billion to build a new building, a new stadium, and they figure the Rams and the Chargers will join the Rams there. It's going to be earthquake-proof, allegedly, so when everything else in California falls apart, people can still come to the game, unless, of course, the banks that have their money have fallen toward the center of the earth. I'm very curious about what both of you find most either intriguing or absurd, or perhaps rational from a business point of view about this story. Greg?
I am very excited by the fact that taxpayer dollars won't be help funding the stadium.
I'll believe that when I see it.
Right. Well, you know, that's based on news stories that I've read. but, you know, I don't even understand really how we got to the point where so many tax, millions and billions of tax dollars are going to build stadiums for private football teams. I think $5 billion is a preposterous, laughable amount of money. But, you know, if it's all private, then go ahead and make that sucker earthquake proof and, you know, whatever else. Who cares? Not my money. <You know?
laughs> Olivia, you're good with this expenditure. It's not your money either.
You know, I kind of refrain from giving billionaires advice on how to spend their money. I'm still trying to make rent in San Francisco. So they've obviously learned something that I haven't. But I agree that I will believe it when I see it, when taxpayers aren't paying for this. I'm glad that a big chunk is coming from private ownership. But it always comes down to what residents have to put up with. They're paying for streets and roads and things like that. So it's going to impact their bottom line, individuals. I'm glad it's going to be earthquake proof. I think that's a law. Like, you got to do that. And I wonder if they're just going to make up revenue by charging tickets when you have to go to that stadium during an earthquake, collect some of that money while they're running for cover.
Well, for $4 to $5 billion, it should be super earthquake proof.
Super duper.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Greg Howard of the New York Times and Olivia Christian, executive producer and host of The Game Last Night. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Goodbye. Thanks for having me, Bill.